Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans, just like you, awesome people who are out there in the world. Hello, welcome.
Now that he's done trying to trip me up, in this issue, it's the honey of the gun, the shadow of the hawk, the sound of her wings, and the spoilers of the major plus. We'll trip the light fantastic with another hunk of l'incal, which in English is the incal, bringing you the freshest of takes without all that silly posturing and rolling the bones, dropping our new album on Aquaspin refrigerators, microwaves, and mixers worldwide. So put on your EDM helmet and drop the beats, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 990 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. So glad to have you here. Normally in the first segment, we have news, but I'll be honest, I don't really think that there was anything newsworthy to talk about this week. Specifically comic book related news. There was a lot of rumors. There was a lot of innuendos. There was one movie studio that was so desperately trying to save their upcoming superhero movie that they cajoled a certain actor to go into to therapy as opposed to avoiding arrest warrants. I just don't think that that stuff is. I don't think that stuff's interesting. So I, you know, in lieu of news this week, I just didn't find anything out there that was. I mean, do you guys care? You know who Spider-Man just met in this week's Spider-Man comic book? Probably not.
Was it John Lennon?
No, it wasn't John Lennon. So see, even that isn't.
Was it Peter Griffin?
No. Is there anything?
Was it that kid who played the vampire?
I just haven't seen anything interesting, Matthew. Have you?
Not really. I mean, somebody was like, "Hey, what if this guy was Mr. Fantastic?" And I'm like,
"Yeah, see, that's not news. Yeah. That's just people jibber jawing." Well, and like, listen, and go ahead, Rodrigo.
Well, and more sort of extrapolation of last week's news about, you know, what Discovery Network is doing with Warner Brothers, but no actual news. Just kind of, again, the news hit last week or 2 weeks ago, and now people are spinning their gears about it.
Yeah. So here's a very popular website. Here are their stories. Their big story: Cobra Kai season 5 trailer teases dojo warfare, increases violent prison fight. She-Hulk first reactions label it the best MCU series on Disney Plus. Air Force One: The Perfect Storm director Wolfgang Peterson dies at 81. Jonathan Hendricks' Dream Master awakens a Sandman-like nightmare. None of those are stories. I mean, none of those are, in my opinion, are not newsworthy type stuff.
Three of those sound just like press releases.
I mean, they are, but
just funny.
I mean, one of them's a dead famous person bio that's just like, well, let's crank this one out. Better Call Saul stars discuss their
Wolfgang
characters.
Peterson.
I just told you he was the director of Air Force One and The Perfect Storm.
You haven't seen those.
With Get Off My Plane. That's Harrison Ford as the president.
That's a pretty
That was your Harrison
you've been,
Ford?
You've been sitting on that Harrison Ford this whole time?
Wow. I want my kids back.
The penitent man shall pass. The penitent man shall pass. She-Hulk star appears to tease a Fantastic Four aspect to Daredevil's appearance.
Wait, what?
She-Hulk star appears to tease a Fantastic Four aspect to Daredevil's appearance. Seriously, this is on a top comic book website. I just don't understand how any of this is like.
This is how little news there are now.
Yeah, and I don't know.
She-Hulk.
It's really weird because, okay, so the solicitations, I'm betting tomorrow is going to be my busiest day of the week. I'm in meetings all day. So I'm betting either tomorrow, Marvel or DC are going to say, here's our solicitations. Please get these up right away. They're going to send it at 10 o'clock and they're like, please have this up by 11 o'clock. That might get some people talking. I don't think that there's anything that's going to be super big in that. But, you know, we're done with San Diego, which had very little news coming out of it. We just finished up C2E2 2 weeks ago. No real big news came out of that. Emerald City Comic Con is this weekend. Very little is coming out of that. I think the most interesting thing that came out of Boston Fan Expo was we got to see the Dan DiDio, Frank Miller Publications ash can with the promise of a Sin City, what is it, 1853 or something like that. But even that is more like, oh, it's a solicitation thing. It's not really news. So I don't know. I'm just, yeah, there's just not a whole lot coming out right now. So I find that very, I mean, there is one bit of news that I think is relevant, but it, you know, I didn't get to it before we had to start the show. I mean, Mad Cave Studios, which is a very small publisher, in my opinion, bought Paper Cuts, the graphic novel kids publisher line that does, they do the Asterisk English adaptations. They do the Smurfs, Loud House, yeah. Geronimo Stilton. They do all of those kinds of stuff. So that is kind of news, but I haven't read through everything. It's an acquisition. So here's right. one thing that you should know about acquisitions. People are going to be laid off. Things are going to be cut back. So there you go. That's, I don't know. I don't know why there's definitely something going on when there's not comic book news. I mean, you could go, and again, the stuff that is on another popular comic book site, Superman and Lois, Jordan Elias exits series for personal reasons, going to be recast. Let's see. That's a top story. The Sixth Finger webcomic continues. Netflix movie story. Yeah, maybe that might be something. Dungeons and Dragons releases Spelljammer soundtrack album. Or I'm sorry, it's Spell Jams soundtrack album, Rodrigo. Spelljammer, I mean, for those of you that don't know, is the Starfinder version of Dungeons and Dragons.
Is it?
I mean, it is.
You can definitely call it that, as long as you just keep in mind that Starjammer came out in like 1970 something.
Yeah. I mean, the kid leaving Superman and Lois is kind of news.
Is it though?
Sort of. I mean, yeah, he's one of the major players. I mean, it's not like a huge
Okay, so,
deal,
okay, here, but... ladies and gentlemen, here's your news tonight. Superman and Lois star Jordan Elias exits the series for personal reasons. Next story. Because, why do we just go on to the next story? No reason for his departure is known. So unless he says, look, I've got a serious health issue, or he's come out and said, hey, I'm going in for rehab, or whatever it may be, I mean... I guess it's a story, but it's not. It's a one-liner.
It's the middle of August, yeah, right?
That's the problem. Like,
entertainment pretty much stops dead in the summer, and right now is like the deadest time. So unless there's something scandalous, like
That's the thing. Like I said, the movie studio trying to get their problematic star into rehab or therapy or whatever.
I mean, yeah.
So
I think that the real news here is that a Superman show had a character whose name is Jordan Elsis. Jordan Elsis. Jor-El. Jor-El.
Wow.
Exits. See, think about that. That's the news. That's what they should have told us.
Yeah. It's all connected. Yeah.
It's all connected. I actually kind of like that kid. He plays an evil mirror universe Superboy.
I'm not saying he's a bad person. Kind of cool. I'm not saying anything bad about him. I'm just like, he exits for personal reasons. We don't know what those personal reasons are. By the way, sources inside of this website who don't really have a source, they're rumor mongering it, say that it's not a workplace related incident. Yeah. And it's not a news story. Let the person be. Leave him alone.
Leave him alone.
Leave Brittany alone.
Anyway, let's do some reviews instead. Let's see. Who do we have this week? Matthew, what is the last Shadow Hawk? This is coming out of Image Comics. Got a whole bunch of covers. In fact, I think the front cover and the back cover are renditions of the very first cover of Shadow Hawk.
One of them is actually a Sienkiewicz version of the Sienkiewicz version of the original Shadow Hawk. So if you don't recall, and honestly, I don't blame you. If you don't, 30 years ago, Image Comics debuted Shadowhawk, one of the series from their Big Seven creators. This is actually the one, ironically, the one made by the creator that I liked the most that turned out to be the series that I cared about the least. And the Shadowhawk series was set apart from the others by most of the original Image books were about teams of brutal vigilantes doing stupid things for stupid reasons. Shadowhawk was about a solo vigilante doing stupid things for his own reasons, plus he had HIV. But it did eventually establish, as we see in The Last Shadowhawk number one, that the Shadowhawk is actually a generational mantle that travels on and on and on. Regarding those alternate covers, some of them literally are the exact same reprinted alternate covers that we got on issue 0, 1, 2, and 3 back in 93. So, hey, awesome for that. Although there is one, Chris Jeruso, the mini Marvels guy, has his own Last Shadowhawk alternate cover in his style, which I think is really kind of cool. This issue is written and drawn by Philip Tan, with art assist inks by Daniel Enriquez, and Jim Valentino apparently not involved. But we find that in the future, at a time 20 minutes into the future, something has happened, and the Shadowhawk that we know maybe has died, maybe, and a new Shadowhawk has taken up the role. Now, here's the thing. Sometimes when reviewing a comic for the Major Spoilers podcast, hello, future people, we love you, I don't want to spoiler things. And sometimes when reviewing a comic for the Major Spoilers podcast, it's hard to discuss something because the story is entirely tied into 30-year-old continuity, and we don't have the time to go over it. We really don't. This book is a little of both. The Egyptian pantheon, the actual Egyptian deities, including one who looks remarkably like Moon Knight, which I think is either a shout out or somebody, you know, actually took Khonshu's image from somewhere in the real metaphysical history. I don't know. But I will tell you this, as this story breaks down, it becomes clear that two things are in play. One, it is a one shot. Much like the Sleepwalker one-shot of a year or so ago, the Darkhawk one-shot last year, it is the 30-year anniversary of a property that didn't make it anywhere close to 30 years. However, that said, as someone who doesn't want to spoiler the cool parts and doesn't have time to explain the silly parts and never really liked the Darkhawk series, I kind of enjoyed this book, and I felt like the ending is 100% appropriate for Darkhawk until they literally quote the entire Dylan Thomas poem about going gently into the good night. That knocks it down a little bit in my eyes, but again, I know what they were going for. It is actually well-drawn, more well-drawn than I expected, because I don't want to be mean. Philip Tan's recent art style doesn't necessarily, it's not my jam. But there's some, I don't know if I want to call it just like stylistic changes, or there's something going on in these pages that feels different. It may be the inker, but it definitely feels a little more complex. It feels more like the kind of work that we got out of Brent Anderson on the second half of Rising Stars. It feels very Spawn influenced, if that makes sense. And that's both in terms of story and in art. And I've always felt that Spawn has some craft behind it, even though, you know, it's not, again, not necessarily my jam. And back in the 90s, we had a lot of things to say, making fun of Spawn and, you know, the Dark Hawk and the Hawk Darks and the Shadow Hawks. But I will say this. 3 slices of meatloaf for The Last Shadowhawk number one. First of all, it is what it says on the cover. Second of all, that doesn't really mean anything because I don't think we're ever going to get like this long spanning take on the actual history of the Jim Valentino Shadowhawk mythos. But if you were a huge Shadowhawk fan back in 1992, you probably want to check this out. And if you were not, if you're just some guy walking down the street, you have no idea what I'm talking about in terms of Shadowhawk, but you think, do I want to pick this up? I will tell you this, unlike many of the recent anniversaries and, you know, big whatever issues, it's priced the same as your average comic book. It's $3.99. It's not like a huge output. And at the very least, it's a cool looking suit and you get to see people jumping around in it. So again, three slices of meatloaf for the last Shadowhawk number one. I don't know if it's too much to hope that this goes somewhere, but even if it doesn't, it's kind of fine.
All right, there you go. Out next week, or maybe it's this week. It's hard to tell sometimes with Titan Comics, but it was listed as this week, but the solicitation information says next week. But in any case, Gun Honey Blood for Blood number one from Titan Comics, their True Crime imprint. True Crime means a lot more violence, a lot more sexy times, and both of those things combined for your True Crime stuff. So who is Gun Honey? I have no idea, but if you remember, was it a couple of weeks ago, we did the discussion on Modesty Blaze. And one of the things we said was, for some reason, she just takes her top off so she can go fight a guy. And then apparently later in the series or in other stories, she's like, there's a lot more nudity or stuff in there for that. That's kind of what Gun Honey is, from what my take is. In Blood for Blood number one, and how do we know about the violence and the sexy times? Because it starts off with some young girl, maybe connected to the mob. I don't know who she is. She's the daughter of some bigwig guy, getting murdered in the shower by somebody who is using the same MO as Gun Honey. And so when her liaison slash handler goes out to meet her and walks into her house, apartment, whatever it is, and she's naked with her bottle of Jack and her vibrator out on the bed next to her, and she's naked. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff you're getting into. So the rest of the issue kind of is, okay, who's trying to impersonate you because you're supposed to be retired? We need to travel the world seeking out who is trying to imitate you. And oh, by the way, it may be this person. So there's a lot of adventure in this. There's a lot of globetrotting. There's a lot of James Bond type stuff. Like I said, it feels like there's some Modesty Blaze influence in here, but, you know, taken to the next level. Is an adult comic, obviously, from what I've said so far. So be aware of that as you're going into it. Or maybe that's what you're into, in which case that's fine too. I'm not really prudish about these things, but I think that, you know, sometimes when things like some of the descriptors that I've already used just jump right out into your face, it may be there for titillation purposes or for, you know, for web vernacular clickbait type stuff. Mm-hmm. But the art is fine. I like the art. The story is a little bit convoluted because there's been some Gun Honey books that have come out before. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not really up on it, you may be a little lost as to who all the players are. But I think by the end of the first issue, you kind of are up to speed. But yeah, there's people getting killed in very violent ways, globetrotting. I don't know what else to say. That's really what this issue is about. The mystery will deepen and revenge will come into play. And I'm sure there will be some steamy shower scenes in coming issues. So Gun Honey, Blood for Blood number one, while it's enjoyable for what it is, I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf out of five. I kind of found it a little boring, to be honest, but still it's a well-told tale. It's hitting the plot points that it needs to hit. It's got the art in the way that it needs to be. It's got the splash pages where the splash pages need to be. So it's fine. I think it's better than average, but it's certainly not hitting up into the upper echelon of fine meatloaf. So 3.5 slices of meatloaf from me. There's a link in the show notes if you want to go and pick it up and check it out for yourself.
Would you say it's a James Bondage comic?
No, I would not, because I don't use horrible puns. All of
that is
my
a lie,
puns,
sir.
All of my puns are only the highest class of puns. Not once. So no. Let's jump ahead a couple of weeks though to September 7th, Rodrigo. And let's see what's coming out of Dark Horse Comics from one of my favorite comic book writers, Cullen Bunn.
Yeah. Colin Bunn cannot be stopped.
He cannot.
We are looking at Shock Shop number one. It is a horror anthology from Dark Horse. So in this issue, there are two stories, like two separate horror stories, of course, brought together by our sort of narrator type person or host, I guess, a lady with a skeletal hand named Desdemona Nimue Moreau.
What's her other hand named?
Oh, her other hand's Jeff. So in the first story, it's kind of like a bunch of campers go out, and we learn that there is some like real trouble between some of them, and then that trouble may be mirrored in a supernatural sense, maybe. And in the second story, we follow this divorced dad who is convinced that the new house that he moved into is inhabited by like elves or pixies or something like that. And maybe that's not what it is. I found it very enjoyable. I like anthology comic books. I like horror anthology comic books. You know, this is kind of hitting all those buttons of, you know, your crypt, Tales from the Crypt, or, you know, Creepy Tales or whatever. But it's a brand new IP. It is drawn. I really like the art. Danny Luckert and Layla Lays do an excellent job, or Lees, I don't know, do an excellent job. Just really, because, you know, you want the thing about horror is like you want appropriately proportional humans that you can tell apart, so you can tell when someone's being torn apart. And you want, you want scary monsters, and both of these artists deliver on both counts. I'm gonna give it 4.5 slices of meatloaf. It's really good. Check it out.
There you go. Cool. I think I flipped through this when the review copy came in, and it's always interesting. You're right. Cullen Bunn is just a writing fool, writing for everybody, it seems. And he does a great job for horror stuff. If you are in the Kansas City area, he will be at Free State Comic Con, the next Free State Comic Con up there in Lawrence in a week or so. I think they have Free State like every month, but he's coming up, I believe, in the September one. So you can go see him there. There you go. All right. Thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you, Matthew. Dear listener, if you want even more reviews, you know where to go. Head over to MajorSpoilers.com and check out all of the reviews that we have over there on the site. Also want to send a big shout out this week to Simon Chambers and to Cody McGee. They are our newest Major Spoilers patrons. Thank you so much. We're very grateful. We honestly are, that you're joining us and the rest of the awesome Spoilerites over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Want to hear your name on the show? Want to get a shout out? Want us to say something nice about you? Like Simon Chambers has the nicest car in his neighborhood. Everyone's jealous of his car. And Cody McGee. Cody has just got a wonderful name. I want to see an animated television series about Cody McGee. We can give you that shout out when you head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers and join us today.
Cody McGee.
Yeah, there's actually a really cool animated series. My youngest kind of watches it on and off. It's the Ghost and Molly McGee, which is kind of a cool, cute show. Nice. So there you go.
Cuter than you and cuter than me.
Let us take a look at the Incal, Volume 3, What Lies Beneath. When we last left our heroes, they were in a ship that was about to spiral down into an acid whirlpool, taking them to the center of the earth. And then what happened, Rodrigo?
The center of the earth?
Well, they were being chased by the necrodroid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they fall into a place where all the garbage goes, and it's full of rats, and the rats can change size. And then there's a lady, and she's like, "The rats can change size." And then they all learn about the rats. And then she takes them on a journey while they're being chased, and they go to the sun that lives inside that planet. And then they get on an elevator to go to the sun. And then in there, some guys are like, you have to go through the mirror. And so they go through the mirror to this crystal place, but they fall asleep because of the crystals. But then the Necrodroid wakes them up.
And then
somebody kills the president.
Yeah, they have to transcend their bodies or something. They have to join the black and the white incals together. Blah, 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 blah. I will be quite honest.
You have
honest.
To reach a state of peace.
I will be quite honest. I hated this volume.
Huh. Aww.
And the reason why I hated it was because what's the Valerian and his sidekick?
Valerian and Lorelai. So
when you watch something like the Thousand Planets movie, the adaptation of that, and he's crashing through all of the different worlds, or when you watch Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and he and America Chavez are punching through the various multiverses in a single second. I think that's kind of cool. I think, you know, that really quick 30-second thing is just enough to tease you. But here it's like, and here we are in the world of all the crystals. Don't anybody touch the crystals or we're going to fall asleep. Oh, somebody touched the crystals. We all fall asleep. And that's two pages of that. Okay, now we're awake and now we're in this other world. And I just hated that. It's like we're trying to build up a world. We're not giving you we're giving you more than you need, but we're not giving you more the enough that you want. And I was just horribly disappointed in this super madcapped chase through the inner planets.
So one of the things that I think I brought up last time we did this was that it's very difficult to tell with the Incal what you should pay attention to or what you should remember, right? Because in the last one, it's like, oh, there's this monster, but inside the monster, it's a spider and the spider can change shape. And actually now the spider's dead. So it doesn't matter that, like, if you were like, the spider has a complicated name. So if you learn the spider's name, that doesn't matter anymore. The spider's dead, right? So it's like, you're just constantly barraged with new stuff. At the very beginning of this, they introduced like a whole crew of like space travelers and only really one of them matters. I don't know if these guys are going to come back. So I didn't try to remember their names because I'm like, there's a good chance that these guys are going to be dead within a couple of pages.
They end up on floating prison planet.
Yeah, or that they're going to do something else, but it won't matter, right? It's like, whenever I see characters come back, like the Emperoress or the Necropope or whatever, I'm like, okay, I remember these guys. And of course, the like what are now like your core seven characters that are in the party, I'm like, okay, well, I remember these guys too, but anything else that gets introduced is immediately put on probation. I'm like, I am not going to memorize what this is. I'm not going to like give it any sort of weight until I know it's sticking around.
I think the part that frustrated me the most was when who's Doghead guy?
Wolfie.
Kill.
Yeah, Kill.
Killy Wolfhead.
You know, we know that he hates John DeFool, but I don't think that they, especially in the previous two volumes, really push up how much he hates him, because, you know, you're running through all these fantastic adventures in this book, and Kill never says really anything until they get to the point where it's like, you must become at peace and you must forgive one another. Kill, you must forgive John DeFool. And he's like, no, I can't. Oh, forgive me, John. I'm such a fool. And it's like, okay, there's been really no buildup to get up to that breaking point for him to, come to a point where he can forgive DeFool for shooting him in the ear.
Yeah. The other thing is that I'm probably wrong about this. I probably either missed it or forgot it, but it's like, finally the seven have gathered here. And I'm like, I feel like all these guys are together because of circumstance. Are they saying like there was some sort of like prophecy? Because there's really nothing like only some of the characters are tied together, right? Obviously the Mena Baron and what is it?
Kill and his son.
Salune,
Salune, and so that's like one pair, and then Salune is tied to the lady and John, right?
Right. And Anima and John are like in love or like gonna be in, I don't know. And then there's like,
but Emma is also his mom and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also the pterodactyl is there.
Yeah. But this really is the first time that we've assembled, I guess it means something, that like, yeah, they're like a team.
Yeah. So it's very hard to tell. And it feels, I hate to say it, but it feels like they decided this just now. So much of this book feels like we've gotten here and then it's like, oh, well, as it turns out, these are the seven that manifest the magical double reverse pyramid. And it's like, okay, yeah. I guess that's what's happening.
To an extent, a lot of that feels also very much Fifth Element, which again comes from the same creators or inspired by the same, time period, et cetera. So there's a lot of that goes on here where you've got to reach a certain state and here's the chosen one and all of those things. And I can get that and appreciate it, but I just feel, I really felt like I was being jerked around in the story, right? Because when they're in the garbage kingdom and they're like, beware the rats. And then they're like, okay, we also have to be aware of these, whoever they are, the troll people that are going to attack us. And it's like, oh, okay, they're going to have to battle their way through all the troll people. And then we see the pages of the troll people getting all worked up and like, you know, we're going to go and kill. There's the ship that they're in. Let's go and get them. And they go and they start to swarm the ship. And the ship takes off and one guy hangs on and that's the end of their
adventure
with their. Yeah. And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. So I was. Yeah. I don't know.
Those are the parts that I actually liked. And I don't know if it's that, especially that part kind of feels like, I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where they're trying too hard to be like, hey, you know, you've read these stories before and you've read your Tolkien and you've read all of these stories. We're doing it different. This is 80s, mister. This is like postmodern kind of, we don't follow the rules storytelling. And I don't know. Was this presented?
I can't remember if episodically. I cannot remember if this was originally done in, you know, like heavy metal where it's like two pages at a time.
Well, I know that this is the one that came from 84 because this is the first one that I ever read back when I was 14. And I'll tell you, I had the same reaction when I was young that you had. Like, what is this? I don't like this. I hate this. This is terrible. But having reread it for the MSP, there are parts of it that I kind of enjoyed simply because of how subversive they were to what I expected. You know, I liked the aspects of being surprised. I liked the things where you're like, okay, this is what we've sort of been building to. These seven idiots are going to do something. But I also wonder, and again, I wonder this because people say this is the most, you know, wonderful, fulfilling science fiction adventure ever. I wonder how it reads in the original French. If like there's bits and pieces of story that we didn't get because whoever translated it, you know, didn't think that this was important.
No, I'm pretty sure, you know, today's translations, and this is the Humanoids edition that we have. Humanoids has got the English rights, and they're also working on the movie with Taika Waititi on that. So I think that the translation is probably fine. But I would be very interested. So this came out between 80 and 88 in the French magazine Metal Harlan, which heavy I'm metal. Guessing is probably like heavy metal. And it's probably serialized, you know, four pages at a time or something like you would see in 2080 Weekly, something like that. So I don't know. I don't feel like it was jarring. It was just like, okay, you're setting us up and you're getting us excited about something. And then you're just like, no, none of that matters. And I just felt like that was not. I don't know. Again, the writer, fantastic. The artist, fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I also felt like there was maybe a little bit too much self-indulgence going on in the story where, you know, maybe go into the garbage world, maybe get to the sun and then get to your final destination after you go up the elevator. Maybe you didn't have to go through all that other stuff.
That may be why I liked it, the self-indulgent parts. I think Metal Hurlant actually means like screaming metal. But even so, that's an even cooler title. That's more if you know, excuse the expression, metal. But I kind of like the parts that feel like disjointed, or the parts that feel like we're setting this up, and you know, you're a reader, you know, A to the B to the C, and then, you know, Frodo fights a giant spider in the shadow of Mordor. I don't know the actual, you know, Tolkien. I just know the Led Zeppelin song. But when you get to that point, for me, when they're all like, we have to transcend the hatred that you didn't even know we had, that's the point where I'm like, I really kind of like this. You know, I like the almost stream of consciousness of parts of it, where it, you know, it kind of goes against what I expect from the narrative, but it does so in a way that I'm like, oh, well, where are you going, you stupid story? And then it goes places and it's over here. Hey, look over here. Psycho rats. And for me, that worked. I actually like this better than the last volume. What was the last one? The Black Inn Call?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I liked the first one a lot, but I also liked the first one mostly for the art. I disliked the second one somewhat, but this one I started to like again. And I feel like since the art is still, you know, spectacular, I feel like it may be to the point where this, if I have, you know, my story beats down, this may be the point where they realize, oh, we didn't want to go where the story from, you know, volume one and volume two were going.
Oh, yeah.
So now we're going to make these subtle adjustments and we're going to end up going where this story needs to go. And that's the part of it that I'm just kind of like, almost like characters with a life of their own making corrections to the course of that story. And I feel like that may be the part that people are responding to, that, you know, your Bendises and your, you know, your everybody says, hey, this is a great, incredible, wonderful, ongoing story, and it'll, you know, well, knock your teeth in the dirt.
I loved Black Inkal. I like the Luminous Inkal. This is the one, you know, I thought both of those were great. This is the one that I was just like, yeah, no, there's something missing, or there's something not right in this. I expect that I come back around when we hit What Is Above. I have expect that we'll get to that point where it's like, no, this is really good. You know, may swing back around for that.
You're just going to ping pong back and forth.
No, it's just volume didn't do it for me. I just hated this volume.
I think Matthew's right. I think we're all sort of sensing this course correction.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of us, it's like, oh yeah, this is now, this is finally getting going. It's like everything else was a prelude. And for some of us, it's like, but I like the first half.
Yeah. I did. I was going to read more beyond what we had to, but I was like, I don't want to be, you know, bring my dislike of this volume over into the next volume. So I'm just going to wait until we get around into What Is Above and let What Lies Beneath, you know, clear my palate, I guess. Mm-hmm. And see if I like it the next time. But yeah, I really enjoyed the first two. I really enjoyed the art in this. As always, I enjoy the characters and who they are. There's a lot of deep stuff that is literally just glossed over, in this book that I think deserved a little bit more play. And I'm not just talking about, I wanted to see them fight the troll men. I wanted to see a little bit more discussion on what does it mean to be, you know, this father, you know, this woman shows up to you in a dream and says, take this child and raise him as your own. And mm-hmm. the Meta Baron going, yeah, I'll do this. I wanted a little bit more to that story. I wanted a little bit more besides the whole thing where Anima reveals, I think it's Anima, right? Where she reveals to John Defoe, oh yeah, I came to you as one of the sex workers and I let you get me pregnant. And that's how this kid came about. I mean, that almost feels like a cruel joke, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's how he takes it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's kind of no time for him to
absorb and adapt. It. Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of what I'm like, okay, if I think in a modern, like in a more recent way, if another creator was doing something like this, they would probably just resort to text boxes rather than having the characters talk. They would be like, and then we went through the mirror and then we walked through the magical crystal place and we fell asleep and then we woke up and blah blah blah. Right. And that would give you that distance that allows you to basically make a montage, right? Like a travel montage, which is kind of what this basically what this volume is.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
But unfortunately, I feel that it also tries to have it both ways. It tries to do that and also puts the characters in these situations where it's like, well, like, these situations are things that characters need to deal with and process. And you know, it's like, yeah, it seems sudden that Kill forgives John. It seems sudden that they're like, okay, Saloon, walk into the center of this and become a dual being, right? And then he does, and it does, and it happens, and everybody's like, okay, everybody concentrate and transcend your body, and every, like, in one panel, everybody does that, right?
Yeah.
There is no moment in which somebody's like, I'm sorry, I'm like a concrete pterodactyl. I don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that feels unsatisfying because, again, the book is kind of setting up these stakes and not following through with them. I think part of it is the format. I think, again, we are used to seeing this done differently. But a part of it is also that, we need to see the characters deal with stuff. Like, it is unsatisfying to not see the characters deal with stuff. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in next issue, the characters get a little bit of time to breathe and go like, oh yeah, about that whole thing where we made a pyramid out of our soul selves. What was that about? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that you're right, Matthew, and that they are trying to correct the ship and get back into the point of the story that they need to go. But yeah, I don't
think that's what Matthew was saying. I think Matthew was saying that they're correcting away from that. Like, they're
right.
They decided
that they're going to go somewhere else entirely. And that's actually kind of cool for me.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they go somewhere because here's the thing. If you're going to get this, you might as well just get the big InCal collection that Humanoids publishes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's a beautiful collection. And just like anything that you read, even if you read the giant Frank Miller omnibus of Daredevil, there's going to be large chunks of that collection that you're like, yeah, I didn't really care for that. I really wanted this part. Sure. And I think that's fine. But for me, it's just like, this is the part that fortunately it reads very fast because they don't spend a lot of time anywhere. So it will be over very quickly. I guess is my thought on that. Matthew, Rodrigo, any other thoughts that you guys have?
No, I actually think that covers it pretty well. This is going to be one of those stories that, I really do feel much, you know, like I said, in a completely different podcast about a certain writer that I enjoy. Sometimes when you're writing a story, the characters end up wanting to go someplace that you didn't intend for them to go. And when that happens, you kind of have to either live with it or, you know, lose your mind and fall apart. And I appreciate the fact that when it seems like that's what happened here, they went with it and rolled someplace entirely different. So,
Rodrigo, anything else?
Yeah, I think that this one, you know, What Lies Beneath, is a transitional story, no matter what. Like, if you've been listening to talk about the InCal, don't go find this one and hop into this one.
Oh, like, no.
Definitely. Definitely read the prior ones. But again, just 100%, this stuff is worth it for the art, right?
It's
even if the plot, like, the plot is kind of nonsensical and takes a lot of big jumps, and that's fine, but it's not bad. But it doesn't matter because the art is good anyway.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, like I said, get the whole thing, read the whole thing. Parts of you're going to like, parts of you're not going to like. The art is always fantastic in this thing. So, all right. I think we're cutting out of here a little bit early this week. Matthew, where can people find more of you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mighty King Cobra. I've been having a particularly weird late lunch break lately. So, you know, get there when you get there and something fun will be happening.
Rodrigo, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Fearsome Critter. There's a pin there and that'll take you to my Twitch and to some of the stuff I've written.
Yeah, go. Rodrigo does game streams on Wednesday afternoons. Mm-hmm. What's the Twitch channel and what times do you stream?
The Twitch channel is L Pikachon, so twitch.tv/ LELPIKACHON, And I stream on Pacific time Wednesdays around 1:30 to 3:30, but no stream this week. So we'll pick that up next week. Yeah.
All right.
But you can go and watch an old stream.
Yeah, there's archives there. Also, yeah. Rodrigo has a YouTube channel. What is it? The Lopez Family Happy Hour.
Lopez Family Variety Channel.
Oh, Variety Channel. Sorry.
Yep. It's a mouthful, you know, if you subscribe and click that bell icon, you only ever have to type it in once.
There you go. This week on Finally Friday, it'll be me flying solo. And this week we are doing One Question Friday. I had some people over in the Discord come up with a really great question. We're going to take a deep dive for the entire Finally Friday on that question. That is 4:30 p.m. Central Time on the Major Spoilers Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Major Spoilers. So you can go check that out. Also announced this week is an audiobook that Brad Will and I recorded back in 2018, and I finally got around to editing it. It is our take on the Dunwich Horror from H.P. Lovecraft. Brad did, I think, a fantastic job of putting this together. We are releasing it in a weekly series beginning next week. So there's 10 chapters. They're fairly short, you know, 10 minutes each, 10 to 15 minutes. I think the longest one is maybe 20. But you'll be able to find that. Just look up the Dunwich Horror from H.P. Lovecraft from Major Spoilers over on your favorite podcast channel. First episode drops, as I said, next Monday at 10 a.m. So you can go and check that out. And there was one more thing I was going to mention to people, but I can't remember it off the top of my head, and that's okay. A lot of good stuff going on at Major Spoilers, and we certainly have our patrons to thank for that. So once again, if you want to join us over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/Major Spoilers. Would love to see some more of you spoilerites coming and hanging out with us over there so that we can do a few more things that we have up our sleeves. In the meantime, that's where we're going to wrap up this issue. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, next week, what are we doing? Next week is, let me look here. Oh, it's a general chat next week on the Major Spoilers podcast. Why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of a Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Star Raven, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.